This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Well, it is officially the holidays and the time when most magicians traditionally get the most bookings. And so many of you might be listening to this on your way to or from an engagement. And hopefully all is going well for you this holiday season and your diary is full of a lot of shows. And if not, then start marketing. And if you're not sure how to market, go back and listen to the archives of this podcast. There are several people who have given advice on how to boost your social presence in the social media and different ways, of course, how to promote yourself in order to get more bookings, and then also how to develop a good show so you have these repeat bookings also with your clients. So anyhow, it is the holidays. I wish you the best of the season, and I hope all is going well with you and your family. You're keeping safe. Drive safely to and from your locations or wherever you are going. And I hope that for Christmas, you get everything that you want. And speaking of that, just a couple of suggestions of things that I have seen this past year that were pretty darn good and worth your money, I think, in investing or buying to enjoy. It wouldn't be necessarily as an investment. One, of course, is the Joshua Jay book, which I think is phenomenal on how magicians think. He's been on a nationwide tour promoting that book. I would recommend that for your friends who are non-magicians as well, because he doesn't explain any secrets in there, but he does talk about magic. He has 52 chapters, just like the number of cards in a deck, and it is a very delightful read, an easy read, something you can just sit down and read a chapter or two at a time, because it's only two or three pages for each chapter, and it's delightful, well-written, and highly recommended. And he's also got a podcast that he talks about these different chapters then as well. So I would recommend you might consider downloading and listening to his podcast then as well. It's very well produced. He has quite the staff there to help produce this with background music and everything. Very well done, very slick podcast, unlike this one, which I do it all myself. I'm the chief cook and bottle washer and do it all. And as far as marketing and producing and editing and everything, and he's got a staff, and it really, it's great. Also, another book which is really wonderful is The Sawing Book, of course, by Mike Caveney, that has come out, quite a complete tome. It's a quite lengthy, heavy book that is about the sawing illusion, and we just completed the 100 years since it was originally invented and had come out, and answer some questions that you may have had about them. It's delightful. Another one, and the third one, then I'll leave it with this, and that is the David Copperfield book. That is available also for the general public. I know it's available through not only Amazon, but also, I believe, through Barnes & Noble and any other bookstores, and you can find it in different locations. And in fact, I would recommend, if you're going to be buying it through Amazon or anything through Amazon, please go to themagicwordpodcast.com. And if you scroll to the bottom of any of the pages, you will see a graphic there saying Amazon affiliate. And if you'll click on that, that will take you to Amazon, where you can then shop and buy. And as an affiliate of Amazon, we get a little bit back as well. So this is one way of helping to donate to the Magic Word Podcast through your purchases. So it's an easy way for you to help. Please consider clicking on the Amazon affiliate graphic on the page for themagicwordpodcast.com. Again, at the bottom of the pages, and you'll find it, even on whether you're looking in your iPad or your phone or the computer screen. Just scroll all the way to the bottom of any of the page. You'll find it. Click on that, and then anything you want to buy for the holiday season or anytime, then it will help us through their affiliate program. Thank you in advance for that. This past week, we posted an episode with Murray Sawchuk, which was our eighth Christmas visit with him, in which he talked about what's been going on in Las Vegas, and it has been very well received and one of the highest rated and downloaded episodes, not just recently, but pretty much of the year. It's really gotten a lot of interest, and if you wonder why, perhaps I suggest, if you haven't listened to it, go back and click on that and download and listen to that yourself. I think that you will enjoy that episode. But beginning this week and for the next couple of weeks, we're going to turn our attention to women in magic and speak with someone here this week, and then next week, just before Christmas, and then the following week, just before New Year's. And if you subscribe to the Magic Chord Podcast pod letter, it will tell you who's going to be coming up. Just go to themagicchordpodcast.com. You'll see there where you can subscribe to the pod letter. My guest today is Melanie Kramer. As the old song goes from the musical, she's just a girl who can't say no. And that is a good thing because she has a lot of opportunities that open up for her by saying yes to this and that and whatever it might be. I mean, goodness, she is a mime, a stilt walker, an actress, a ventriloquist, a model, a master of ceremonies, as well as a magician's assistant. She works inside and outside of the boxes, so to speak, the magician's illusions. She is perhaps the most ebullient and effusive guest I have ever had on this podcast, and it was just a real joy talking with Melanie. I learned a lot as I entitled this episode Inside the Box, because she's just not thinking inside the box, but she actually knows it from the inside out. So she can give good advice of what it's like actually being inside the box. So whenever she's talking with other assistants and training them what to do and how to fold and get inside to where they need to be, she's the person. And she has worked with some of the best out there, including Chris Angel, Jeff McBride, RJ Cantu, Dirk Arthur, James DeMayer, and the list just goes on. With those she's worked, had such a long time relationship and working with these wonderful magicians. Anyhow, I know you're going to learn a lot if whether or not you are a stage magician who might be looking for an assistant to help with your illusions, or you don't even have to have her work inside the illusions. Perhaps there are other things that she could do on stage, plus all the rest of the things that she does with her company, Posh Productions. Anyhow, I'm going to let her talk with you about this. This is a delightful conversation. I hope you enjoyed as much as I enjoyed having the opportunity to chat with her. So please welcome my guest this week, Ms. Melanie Kramer, here on The Magic Word. This morning we are talking with someone who is on the other side of the box.
The inside.
The inside, that's right. You guys listen to, guys and gals, listen to The Magic Word Podcast for a variety of reasons, and one is to hear the inside scoop and what's going on the inside, and I think Mel, you just put it perfectly. This is what's going on the inside. So we're going to talk with someone who is actually a magician's assistant and choreographer. I don't know, we're going to get into just a ton of stuff that you do, and with costuming and producing and everything that you've been doing. You have been there, done that with so many people and are such a well-known figure. Perhaps among those who are professionals who know about you, those who don't will now get to know more about you by listening to this episode. Please welcome my guest, Melanie Kramer. Hey there, Melanie.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
I am so excited about having you because I have often had people who are assistants in one way or another, or I've talked with the pair, for an example, with Tommy Tin and Amelie, you know, or Jeff and Tessa Everson. They don't have to be mentalists that I have to talk to, but a lot of times there are couples or pairs that
they're,
I talk with.
They're good mentalists, you don't have to talk to you.
That's right. We just kind of sit there. But it'd be a boring podcast, you know. Yeah, it's like, what are they thinking? I'm thinking this thing. However, you've been working with a lot of people, certainly for quite some time. Yeah. And do you enjoy actually being on stage more and the dancing and the choreography? Or do you like kind of the intricacy of, what am I trying to say, being a contortionist, you know?
Well, I like all of it. You know, magic is, it's unlike any other thing that I do, and I do a lot of things, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
There's so many precise things that have to happen at certain times, and everything has to be so right on for everything to go smoothly, and I kind of like that pressure in an odd way.
Yeah.
It's the only, like, stressful thing that I love. I don't do anything else that, you know, is that kind of pressure.
It would be a lot of stress, and in that regard, by rehearsing a lot, you don't have to worry so much because you don't have as much stress of the last minute, but I'm sure there have been times in which you've been kind of put into a last-minute situation saying, hey, I need an assistant, like today, this afternoon show, someone got ill, and they give you a call,
right.
I assume.
Yeah, so I'm very, I'm the go-to last-minute girl because I'm very detail-oriented, and I take it upon myself to make sure that I do learn every bit of everything that could go wrong, and where's your backup trick, and all the things that a lot of other assistants don't know to ask for. You know, how many times do you cough before I bring you water? Those are things that we don't even, if you don't talk about beforehand, you don't know, and then I walk on with water. water and you look at me like I'm crazy, but I thought you were coughing and I thought, so it's, you know, things like that. There's a lot of things that go into being an assistant that a lot of even assistants might not know, but I've been doing it for so long and I'm extremely attentive. So yes, there's a lot of things that you need to do.
With doing that, you say you've been doing it for so long. Yes. I mean, you have a perennial youthfulness about you. I mean, you're
I'm very immature for my age.
Very immature for your age. Well, and beautiful as well. And I assume that you have just a lot of different costumes and everything then too.
Largest room in my house is my costume room. Look, my boobs wanted to talk. The mic just kind of slid down.
Yeah, my eyes are up here.
They have a mind of their own, they do.
Yeah, it's kind of like a gravitational pull.
I guess you could call it that. The largest room in my house is my costume room.
Okay.
So it's...
you get like dozens and dozens.
Oh, it's ridiculous. I mean, I freelance for a living, so magic is just one of the many things that I do. Mm-hmm. So I'm always having to costume myself and come up with my own characters and all the things. I'm a stilt walker and an actress and a model and a mime and a ventriloquist and MC and a, you know, you name it, I've probably done it. I own a company called Posh Productions.
Posh Productions. Yeah. And what is that? I mean, you produce other people's shows?
Yes. We work with a lot of circus performers and things. So my business partner is in Cirque du Soleil. She was an acrobat for many, many years, an Olympic gymnast. Mm-hmm. And so between the two of us, oh, sorry, I'm getting my picture taken. I have to stop and smile. So we do all kinds of things. You know, we book a lot of special events and things. And we book for Elro, which is a huge music festival from Spain. And they do events all over the world. And we book for them in Washington and Chicago and Florida. And
that's not
Las
the ones
Vegas.
That are in the circus tent that are in the parking lot?
No.
Okay.
They're do like EDM, kind of like electronic music.
Oh, okay.
But we have crazy weird characters that everybody's got unibrows and blacked out teeth and we run around and mess with people. So it's kind of fun. Yeah, it's a fun show. It goes all over the world. So we're pretty blessed to be
so
a part of it.
So as far as your costumes, do you sew those? I mean, are you a seamstress and everything?
No.
Okay.
But I have a team of people that I hire.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. I have prop builders and all the things. So but you know, I'm a go-to for a lot of things in this town just because I've been here for so long and I'm very, very extremely blessed to say that I've never had a normal job in my entire life. Mm-hmm. I've been freelancing as my sole source of income since I was 17 years old.
Okay.
So, and we won't say how old I am, but that's a very long time.
At least a year.
Yeah, it's been a good 10 years. Yeah. What can I say? No.
And they're very kind
to
you.
Yes.
Well, do you normally work just in Vegas or...
I work all
wherever they call you.
Yeah,
obviously.
Wherever somebody will pay me to go.
Well, of course. Well, where's one of the most? Have you gone on tour with some people?
I have.
Well?
Actually,
so it's not just a one-off thing.
Right. This is what I do. So the only out-of-country things I've done, I still haven't gone to Europe, which is very sad. If anybody wants to take me, I'm open to it. But I went to Japan with Criss Angel for 10 days. So I was Criss Angel's assistant from like 2001 till for about 8.5 years.
When did he open at the Luxor?
I would have to think back of what year that might have been, but I did his Broadway show. He did a Broadway show for 2 years. I don't know. A lot of people don't know that about him, but he was actually...
Was that when he was... back when he would be hung by hooks and everything
that?
And he had some sort of a type of a show that was
very
with the
dark.
Subtrunk and all that stuff?
He didn't say a single word the entire show.
Really?
So
okay.
My character was the one with the stripes and the asparagus head.
You were that person.
Yes.
I've seen the video.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that was me. So I did that the second year of that show.
But he's from... New York. So
yes,
did
Long
he
Island.
Call you from Long Island? Or
it's
how did
very
that come
strange.
About?
We actually don't really know how we met. We had been
it's
in
weird.
Contact for a few years. I was working with Dixie Dooley and some other people, so I was already working
is
in
Dixie
magic.
Is Dixie still in town? She's still
he
in
is,
Vegas?
Yes.
Okay.
He
haven't
is,
seen
actually.
His show in a long time.
Well, I don't know if he's performing right now.
Okay.
But yeah.
I'm
very, I'm a go-getter. You know, I'm always submitting for gigs constantly, like every single day. This morning, I've already submitted for 3 jobs before I came here.
And it's 10 o'clock in the morning right now on a Sunday.
Very early.
That's right. So what is amazing, I hope the takeaway people are listening to already is how important it is to be proactive all the time. Jobs are not going to come to you, and people who are getting the jobs are the ones who are in the minds of the people at the moment.
Constantly.
And so you got to keep putting your name
always
in the
face
in front of
them. Always reminding people that you're there and that you're looking for work, is very important. But the jobs, I say that the work is the getting the gigs
that's
part,
because
what we do is fun and we love what we do. So it's the hard part is getting the work. That's
the job. They've always said that show business, when you take all the letters apart, 2/3 of show business is the business.
I always heard you got a show to be in the business. No,
gotta have a show.
Leslie McKinney told me that. I was very young.
Well, that's very true too. Gotta have a show.
I didn't want to wear booty shorts, and he said, "Hey, this is show business. You got a show to be in the business." I said, "I love you."
You got a show to be in the business.
Oh, he's a great man, Leslie McKinney.
But I think it's sometimes more than 2/3 of the time is going to be not the show, or rather more. more emphasis is put on the business side, including the marketing and everything of getting into the show and then yes, following through and everything.
Yeah, you are your own business and you have to sell yourself. And that's hard for some people. You know, it's easier to book other people sometimes than yourself.
Well, going back to Chris Jusiment, that was it was an interesting time. So that was like 2 years he did that show there.
He did the show for 2 years.
And then he was found and then came to Vegas, or was he also pushing just marketing like you were talking about?
He started doing television specials and you know that that's where it's at.
Sure, because so then you're seeing nationally.
Yeah, so I was part of two of those and then we went to Japan and did a television special there as well called Made in Japan. That was only out on DVD. That never really aired in this country, I don't think.
But it was big in Japan, I guess, at the time?
Yeah, it was. It was him versus their big magician, which was Mr. Merrick, I guess, at the time.
Yes, right.
So they did like a rivalry kind of
Mr. Merrick was a mentalist,
yeah,
as I recall, too. So that's a completely different kind of show than what his was, a bizarre kind of.
Well, it was great because we went and he did street magic every day. We were only in the studio 2 days out of 10. So the rest of it, we got to tour to all the different parts of Tokyo where he was filming. Okay. We got off the bus. We got to play. Mm-hmm. We went back and ate lunch and then we left when it was time. And he had to work and we got to play. So it was kind of a great experience. And then I did go to China with Jeff McBride as well. That was the only
Have you worked with the Mystery School much out here?
I go and I speak sometimes.
As an assistant, kind of telling people.
What
is the crux or the outline of your advice when you talk with people as assistants? Because there are people who come to the show just to learn to be assistants.
No, it's magicians that don't know,
because
a lot of magicians, either they haven't, they haven't had assistants or they don't know what to look for when hiring one.
Sure.
You know, there's a lot of things that you can ask in an interview to an assistant that can make a difference of if she's going to be good or not, like a fit with your act.
Right.
And a lot of people don't know the questions to ask. So I kind of go and I say, this is what you need. This is what you could look for. This is what, you know, like, I'll say one that's funny is that fake boobs.
Yeah.
Boobs, fake boobs don't squish.
So some fake boobs,
they don't fit in boxes.
Oh, they don't.
Sometimes doors don't close. Yeah, so I can lay down with my natural big boobs, and I can lay down and shut a door if I need to because it can squish into me and lock.
Mm-hmm.
But some girls, if they're big fake boobs, they can't.
Never thought
so
of that.
Sometimes those are questions that again, people don't want to necessarily ask these days with the Me Too thing.
How would you go about that if you're a magician and you're interviewing and saying,
you do a prop fitting.
Yeah,
you do a prop fitting.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. Not going to fit in that part.
Right.
I just can't quite close that door over there.
Then, you know. But, you know, and a lot of people, there's, you know, certain types of people that make good assistants and ones that don't. And, you know, there's a way to wean through them. And a lot of things that magicians don't know, even just about having their own act, that are detail-oriented things that you don't think about, like costumes and styles. A lot of people will want to say, this is my style when they're, you know, 18 years old and it's very extreme in one direction.
Yeah.
And as they grow and mature, of course, the style changes. So I always say have costumes that are adaptable. You know, like if you're going to have some crazy decal on your lapel, have it Velcro so that if you want to change it out later, you still have a jacket.
Yeah,
you still have a good base of a magic jacket if you have pockets of things hidden in it.
Yeah.
You know, things
mm-hmm.
like that that people just don't think about.
Mm-hmm.
That you know, or having like a track sheet for your show. Like if you have an assistant, you have an illusion show. If you have a track sheet for your assistant, then she knows when her cues are to come on and off.
Right.
She knows she knows everything. So when you get a new girl in the show, you don't have to stop first and learn. You have to teach her everything on and off. And most of the time, the magicians don't know what she does backstage. Half the time, the magician has no idea what I'm doing in the box. Backstage, they don't know. They just know that the table needs to come out here. They don't know anything else. And I'm the one that says, you know, like teaching your assistant how this table is set. A lot of magicians are very guarded with how their table is set.
Yeah.
But if the table gets knocked over before she brings it out,
what
are you going to do?
Right.
So, you know, there's little things like that you don't think of.
Well, even carrying out the table, it could be that the base is heavier than the table. It could rip apart or something could happen. So it's like the magician should tell you, he or she, whoever the magician is, should be telling the assistant, carry it this way.
Right. But there's a lot of things to think of when you're doing your own magic show. There's a lot of little things that
details.
Even. Yeah.
And so do you write like a little track sheet yourself for other assistants?
This is what, a lot of magicians have used me to come in. Like if I can't necessarily do the run of a show, I'll come in and I'll get the show up and running by learning those little things, what the cues are. I write everything, where the presets are, what, you know, the whole list of all of it.
Right.
And even sometimes I'll do illusion demonstration videos, you know, to show what she does in the box and things like that so that the magician has it for his show. That way it's set. This is the choreography. This is the costumes. This is the, you know, everything.
And you draw little illustrations and everything, too?
Do I draw? No, I'm not very good at that.
I thought
stick
you might
people.
Show.
I do.
Okay.
I do, but they're stick people.
Yeah,
but, but you get the point.
Yeah.
You know, and things like having your own costumes in your show. If you have a certain style or something that you want, you can't expect that the girl that comes in, you know, a lot of the time I've used my own costumes in shows. And that's why I say that, because sometimes I'm like searching for a dress that works for their,
right,
their act, when instead, if you just said, this is the dress that I like.
That's a good point. Because again, if you're going to be coming in like at the last minute or something, and a magician says, I have a particular color or scheme or background or whatever, and so do you have a green dress? Or I've got one.
Right.
And you've got to
And then
try
you have to see if it works in the illusion. And then you have to see if it's, all the things. So if you know that about your, what you, if you really know your act and that's what you want, then it's good sometimes. Just
Has there been any kind of a last minute thing that you tell me about some story or something?
One time I was doing a show where I was a stagehand assistant, so I wasn't the lead assistant.
Okay,
so I would do a couple illusions, but I was mainly backstage. Mm-hmm. And the girl that did the show with me, she was the lead assistant. She was taller than me.
Okay.
And I always make it a point when I come into a show, even if I'm not the girl in the box, to do a prop fitting of all the illusions, just so I know what do I fit in, what don't I, in case something happens that I can jump in.
Some people don't recognize the importance. For an example, like a zigzag. When I had my first zigzag, I say first, I only had one. I had it for the right size to fit my wife. It's like, okay, you have to have it built. You know, it's just not like a plug and play. You don't buy a car. It has to actually fit.
Right.
So that's important.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So I was doing the show, and they had birds in the show, and it was like the second illusion. It's so top of the show, and I hear, I hear a scream, and I see the lead girl just run past me. I'm like, you know, we're like using the kitchen as the backstage area in this little lounge. This is downtown. And she runs past me, and she's holding her hand, and I just see blood just dripping.
My.
She had gotten bit by the bird at the top of the show,
okay,
and she runs out. And I'm like, okay, well, the show's still going. I hear the music starting for the next piece, so I know the order of the show. I know I've never seen it from the front, because I'm, you know, we learn the show, we start the show. I've never seen it at all. I don't know what his movements are. I don't know what their choreography is, getting into the prop, getting out of the prop. I have no idea. But I know that the next illusion's about to come out. So I put on her dress, and I went out, and we won the whole entire thing. She came out like the last illusion for bows, and that was it, you know. And that, but the rest of the show I did, and we just kind of, you know, I used my my knowledge of dance and things to kind of make it look like I knew what I was doing, and nobody knew that there was anything wrong. And I've done a lot of shows where things went wrong and people didn't know because I presented or I did something where they said, oh, you weren't supposed to fall on the ground from that broom suspension, but you did a thing with your arm that made us think it was part of the show. That's what I do. Magical gestures.
That's true. Now, you said that you traveled then to China with Jeff. How different was China from Japan? Were there certain things, being a communist country, I was wondering if there were some things you could, places you go or things you could do that you couldn't do in China that you could do in Japan?
Well, again, it was a different experience because I went there we were there for 2 weeks at Happy Valley. So we were performing at their Disneyland.
Yes.
So it's like China's amusement park. So it was a different experience than, you know, going all over Tokyo. So we were doing shows every day. So I only had a few days where I got to actually mission out, but it was great. I'm a vegetarian and I don't eat fish either, so I ate nothing but Italian food in China. Just in case. In Japan, they understood English a little bit better where I was, you know, in Tokyo, but where we were in China, we were in like Shanghai, Songjiang. So it's like they didn't speak a lot of English, so I was very, very afraid of what I put in my mouth. Good advice to everyone. Just always be cautious what you put in your mouth, right?
Have no idea. You can't
in general
tell,
in life. Vegas menu. Especially, yes.
Or anything that is. Now, when you're working with Jeff also, most of that is all about Jeff. His assistants are basically invisible. If they're bringing something or whatever.
Well, we did illusions.
Did you things?
Okay. So I had featured, you know, parts in the show where we were doing character things with each other.
Okay. Like an origami or something?
We did a sword basket. We did his drum illusion where I appear out of the drum. We did... I'm trying to remember what else. It was many years ago. This is like 10, 15 years ago. But no, he's great. You know, I love Jeff. I love Jeff to death.
Yeah. So, it's a mystery school here. I've not attended nor visited yet. At some point, I'll
want
to go by. And I mean, Jeff and I
are good friends. Well, his house in general. You've been to his house, right?
I have not been to his
home. Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's all of his artifacts from all over the world, his travels all over the world.
Yeah.
And then he even has like a secret, you know, you pull the magic award and the bookshelf slides open.
Okay.
I don't think that's a secret because that's where he has his library. I know, not anymore, right? I won't tell you which bookshelf. How about that? Okay.
Or which award to pull.
Exactly.
Because he's got a lot of awards.
Exactly.
You have seen Copperfield's Museum, though, I assume, too.
Actually, no. I mean, I know everybody that works there, and I know Chris Kenner very well and all the things, but no, I haven't been.
Have you ever assisted David on stage?
No. I have done some, I've demonstrated some illusions that he's bought immediately. And, you know, I've met him here and there, but no, I've never. He, Joni Spina actually put me in my first, like, taught me my first illusions.
Okay.
And I know she made him great.
Yeah. Love Johnny.
I love her. Miss her dearly.
We all do. Yeah.
So, and then by the time that I was like up and running, he wasn't really using girls, you know, mm-hmm. so he uses men in his show.
Yeah. So. Interesting. So again, in working in Vegas, I know you're working currently with, speaking with James DeMare in his Martinis and Magic
Love
show.
Him. Mm-hmm.
You're in one of his illusions and some other stuff that you're helping with. And so he's had that now. Well, of course, he was doing it before over at the Thunderbird. Now
yes.
he's at the Mint. Mm-hmm. Were you helping him at the Thunderbird?
No, I've only been with the show. Oh, God, see, I have no concept of time. I'm like
I'm
a puppy.
Say, like,
I
maybe
think it's been
February?
Like... Yeah, I wasn't there. Eliza was doing the show at the beginning, so I wasn't there yet. But I think I've been in the show maybe, I want to say, like 8 months.
Yeah, I was going to say, just throughout
yeah,
this
Yeah, something
this year.
Like that.
Mm-hmm. And then you help Fielding and others from
yes,
time to time?
Yes, I assist mm-hmm. anyone that will use me. Yes, Fielding West is one of my favorites. I miss working on stage with him.
Yeah.
He's in the other room right now. I'm hinting to him. Hey, hey. I haven't toured in a while, Fielding, just saying.
just so you know.
Yeah, so I'm part of several people's acts. Right now mm-hmm. I'm going to work with RJ Cantu. Right after this, I'm going to go rehearse with him. We have a mm-hmm. corporate coming up.
Okay.
Jason Burt. You know, I'm just, I assist everyone. I'm mm-hmm. very grateful to say. And again, from being an assistant for a long time, you know, I've learned how to, like, I almost have telecommunication. What's the telepathy? I can't say words. It's before
powers.
Noon. Did I mention yes. that? yeah. So with magicians, you know, I start to learn how to read people and
sure.
what they need and what they're, you know, what are they going for? And, mm-hmm. you know, you have to be ready all mm-hmm. the time because sometimes they'll go into another piece and you're like, oh, okay, I know the intro. So sometimes I'll ask that, like, what's
right.
the intro to this piece?
Yeah.
That way, if I hear you going into it and you're out of order, I know what to bring out.
Yes.
So
right.
other important things a lot of people don't think about.
Is there a particular illusion that you find would be more difficult to
my
get in
hated,
and out?
Oh, do you know my most hated illusion of all time?
Yes, kind of.
The interlude. I hate the interlude. I don't even really like the way it looks, honestly. I haven't really... It's only been done right a few times that I've actually seen.
Yes. And talking to Jonathan Pendragon about that, he was saying that he had that made for he and Char. Some people may refute this, but this is the story that Jonathan had told me. Was he didn't think anybody does it the same as him because of their... He was supposed to be coming through her. I mean, they were supposed to be so close. Mm. It's like, I am actually physically part of you.
Right.
You know, it's like, I am being
born from
you. It
wasn't like, I'm getting into a thing
yeah.
and you're going to...
No,
yeah,
yeah, exactly. And so it's just he just says, I think it's being presented... wrong that he and Char were the only two who really did it right.
Yeah, well, it's you know, we're kind of numb to magic, so when I see stuff I go, oh God, I could totally I know exactly what's happening and I can see all of it, and so
it
we're very
so
more critical
too
you know?
Tight I guess or
it's just, you know, I have a chronically dislocated shoulder from doing
oh,
illusion
wow,
for too
okay,
long
okay.
The doctor said, have you been popping your shoulder in and out on your own? I was like, probably.
Yeah.
It's from that illusion. I did do it with Dirk Arthur where I didn't mind it because I was in the thing and the tigers were coming out of me. So
wow.
I didn't mind that. Well, not tigers, but
working with wild animals, have you?
Yes.
You've never been bitten, I assume.
No, no. Okay. Well, the only time I worked with large cats was with Chris Angel mm-hmm. and with Dirk Arthur. And Dirk Arthur keeps us very separate from the cats just for safety reasons.
Because I was thinking whenever that you're an illusion, like a, you know, tiger, girl to tiger or something kind of a thing. I mean, there's no risk of danger.
Well,
the way
I mean,
it's built.
You would hope not, but I mean, things always can go wrong in magic. You have to always
be
prepared. I have a lot. I have the scars to prove it. No, I haven't. I mean, I know that there was times, you know, they say, because when girls are on their monthly
uh-huh.
cycle, the cats
will
sense that, and they do dig.
Either.
Sometimes they'll be digging because they
try to get
can,
to that.
Yeah.
Huh.
Oh, sorry, you can hear that.
Yeah, I can hear your claws actually clawing. I was thinking that.
He said, if you hit the table, everyone's going to hear. Here we go. I'm clawing at you.
Wow. So, yeah, I would think that would be kind of dangerous.
Well, magic in general is very dangerous for the mm-hmm. assistant. I mean, I can't tell you countless times that things have gone wrong and I've been hurt. I mean, I've had second, third degree burns. That was on national television.
On which show?
Chris Angel.
Okay. What
happened? I was his assistant for 8.5 years, so a lot of my stories are with him.
What was the illusion that went wrong
there? It was a metamorphosis. We were the only ones in the world that do it without a curtain. So in the show in New York, we use CO2, which has its own problems.
Mm-hmm.
You black out when you inhale CO2.
Wow.
My autopilot, though, I would always do everything I was supposed to until
yeah.
I ran off stage, and then I wouldn't know where I was and would be hyperventilating. And autopilot is a great thing to have.
Wow.
The other girl used to just lay in the box if she did the show, and it happened. But anyway, we did cannons of fire. So they were, mm-hmm. there was 10 cannons, I believe, and it was 12-foot high wall, and it was a 2-second duration of fire that we had. Mm-hmm. So that was all we had to switch. And mm-hmm. we weren't able to practice with the fire at all. So I was like, well, what's my cue? And they said, because there's no music. I mean, on the if you watch the video, it's got a countdown and there's music. There was, of course, none of that. So I was just kind of like, what's my cue? And they said, when you see the fire. I'm fire, like, go. Okay, so I got 2 seconds to do what we have to do, you know? Yeah. And then, so right before the show, they said, well, do you want more cover? Well, of course we want more cover. So one guy took that as, we'll move the charge a little closer. The other guy took that as, we'll add more charge. Those two didn't talk.
Oh, my gosh.
So,
it was closer and more charge.
But I'm very blessed in so many ways, and I will tell you why. That day we were rehearsing, and I was supposed to be Shadow, the character that's completely vinyl. So there's an all-vinyl character named Shadow that he has in the show that wears like a fencing mask, bulbous. It's completely black, pleather. The whole way down. Okay. So pleather is
sounds
highly,
like an S&M thing.
Highly flammable. Yeah, it kind of is. That character is. I came through his stomach on the interlude in the desert for one of the openings of his show.
I don't even know if it.
Yeah, I think it like aired once or something. Okay. They showed it. But anyway, so I was supposed to be that character. And then he said, you know what? I've been rehearsing all day. Like, let's just bring some stuff. We'll figure it out. Like, I'm just going to wear this. And I was like, okay. So I came and I'm not wearing the vinyl suit now. And he says, well, you should probably dye your hair because you've been seen on the show and we just don't want to, you know. And I said, well, I've never dyed my hair still to this very day.
Okay.
Thank you.
All natural, just like everything else.
I was like, you know what? Can I wear a hair piece? And he was like, yeah, that's fine. So I said, okay, I did that. So then they airbrushed a mask over my face so that you couldn't see. They thought it might disguise me like a Zorro mask kind of. So when the flames came, and you can see on the video, like Chris is stumbling, like when he appears, he's kind of like out of it. And I got the brunt of it because I had the first.
You had the first dose.
Yes, I had the first go of it, right? So I kind of woke up in the box and had a lot of things to do before it started turning and just kind of, you know, I came out and I had a flash burn on my whole body.
I was about to say, so nothing was actually burning on your body.
Oh, I was burnt, yes. So yes. I had a flash burn, which is like an instant sunburn on my entire body. So if I was wearing that vinyl suit, it would have bubbled burned to my skin and my entire life and career would have been over. So very, very lucky in that way.
Chris's career could have been over.
Yes, right. Everybody's would have. My hair had gone, my fake hair that I put on was burned. So thankfully, again, that my hair wasn't my natural hair because that could have been a lot worse. The mask that they airbrushed on my face, it bubbled and burned and I did have, that's where my second degree burns were, was on my face and on my shoulder because I must have turned. Yeah. So it was all on the left side. But again, very grateful because the makeup, it saved my eyebrows. Mm-hmm. I don't know how. I'm sure I probably wouldn't have had an eyebrow, at least on that side, if not for that mask. So again, all the things that happened, you know, and it was one take, obviously. They rushed me to, you know, they had to call an ambulance. I was surprised there wasn't one there. And I, you know, went to the hospital and whatever, and it was our last day of shooting, so that was it. So it was one take, so I text from the ambulance, like, how did it look? Did we get it? Yeah. And it's funny because on the extended version, because if you just watch, like, if you YouTube that, you'll only see, like, they cut off when I, you know, when the illusion's over. They don't show anything else. Mm-hmm. But on the extended version on the DVD, they show the me texting and, like, all that stuff. And they were like, she's such a trooper. And I'm like, well, if I'm going to burn myself, I might as well. Hopefully we got the shot, you know? That's what's important. So very lucky. Yes. I'm so lucky, though. I mean, in a lot of ways. I've been hurt in a lot of ways. I mean, I've almost lost fingers and things and swords coming through at wrong times. And
what's happened like in that? I mean, like,
for a lot of magicians that are new to their illusions or when it comes to like a sword or something going through one side and coming out the other.
A little too fast.
Majority of the time I feed it for them or I'm guiding. So I'm at the hole and I'm waiting and I have one finger, you know, and I'm grabbing the sword and I'm pulling it through and one magician forgot that I was doing that, and he, you know, with all his might, rammed the sword, and it went shink on my finger, and I have a scar from it. But it didn't. I didn't need stitches, thankfully, and it wasn't. But metamorphosis is the worst. My shins are naturally bumpy now. Like if you see them in the light, you can see like they're like a bumpy ridge all the way down both of my shins. The most scarring from metamorphosis. You know, and I've had some illusions. Like I used to do Roy Schenck's bow staff every night in World's Greatest Magic Show. And I used to get bloody getting into the box. I was a little too short. So every time I would step into the box, I would skin my shin.
Every time.
And then the scab would just come off. And I was just too short to get in the box. The illusion itself, I never got hurt. But when I would come out with bloody shins, people would love it because they would think that I got hurt in the box, which people love. I also, wow. One thing I used to do that I always warn the magician before I do it, so never fear, but I've never actually gotten to see the reaction, but it's one of my joyous moments in magic is when I do any kind of like penetration illusion where I'm in a box and something is dangerous, The first sword that goes in, I always scream bloody murder.
Yeah.
And I hear that the first couple rows go, and they all jump back, you know, like collectively, like they think they heard something they're not supposed to. But, right. You have to warn the magician before you do that. Otherwise
you do. What happened there?
They might stop the illusion,
Well, it makes sense for the first one as well. I mean.
Oh, yeah. No, it's great. Because then after that, they don't hear anything.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the illusion. Dead. Yeah. The rest of the illusion. They're like, oh, no, he just killed his assistant. which I heard a great fielding story, by the way, about that. If he hasn't told it yet, he should on the show.
I don't know. He's told a few stories, but I don't remember that one.
Oh, he's got some great stories.
Oh, he does have some great stories. That's for sure. Well, I would imagine after some of these, back to that one a minute.
Oh,
why
yeah.
didn't you change into some sort of a skin costume, skin-colored legging or something that would have protected your leg of getting
in? Well, we wear fishnets in the show. It's just one. In World's Greatest Magic Show, we would assist quite a few magicians.
Is that the one of the Greek Islands?
Yes.
Okay, Greek Isles.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It was at the Sahara before that, but I wasn't there when it was there. Mm-hmm. I was at Greek Isle. Mm-hmm. But it was a great show. When I first got the call for it, my friend's like, hey, they need an assistant in the show. And I was like, okay, who's the magician? They were like, oh, there's a lot of magicians. And I was like, ooh, I don't know if I could work with 5 different magicians a day and not want to slip my wrist. But for some reason, I don't know how Dick Feeney did it, but he assembled the greatest cast. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody.
Yes, Kevin James.
Oh, it was Kevin James.
Joseph Gabriel.
Yes, Gabriel. Mm-hmm. It was Roy Schenck. It was Jeff McBride. I mean, everybody who was anyone went through that show. It was Dan Sperry. It was, and it was. It was wonderful.
Jeff Hobson, I think, was there.
Yes, Arden James. I mean, everybody. Yeah. Everyone who was everyone went through there, and they all became dear friends of mine, and I just had the greatest time assisting them all. Anytime a new magician came in the show, I was like, oh, I'll be the girl. Yeah. I want to be in the box. I love what I do. And it's funny because in the rest of my life, I don't like that. I don't have pressure. I'm an entertainer for a living.
Yeah.
I don't have pressure in my life. I don't stress. I don't have anything. But in magic, if you tell me there's this red button and you have to be the one to push it right at this exact moment, otherwise everyone's going to die. I'm like, I'll do it. Yeah. Call me, please.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in the rest of my life, I'm like, you want me to do what? But magic, I'm all about it. I don't know why. It's a weird thrill that I get, I guess.
Is there a time or a season? It used to be that my busiest season was during the Christmas holidays, and when my wife and I we did Metamorphosis and we did Zigzag and a few other things as well.
And all the things.
We'd do 20-30 shows in a month, and she'd be black and blue. And by the end of January, she was trying to get healed again. I mean, are there times that are busier, or that you kind of get injured more often?
Yeah,
illusions.
The injuries happen all the time. And what's really interesting about the human body is that you'll bruise at first.
Yeah.
But then after hitting the same place every night, after a while, your body knows. They're like, okay, we're going to take a screw to the arm today. It's not what you think. Sorry.
Well, there are a lot of things.
Are there children listening? I hope not.
There are a lot of things, you're exactly right, in which after you get into a box, you realize, oh, you need to tap that nail down a little bit more, or there's a sharp edge here.
Or
you need
to know how not to move.
Yeah, because it can't be prevented.
I do tell people when they first start doing illusions, when you get a new box, notice, did I scrape myself here? And then try to figure it out before you get a habit. Because you get habits in boxes. You have autopilot.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
actually been, challenging in some people's illusions, because illusions are all different. And sometimes, they want you to break your habit. Or I was going to do light and sound for the show that I'm in. And I used to do light and sound back in the day.
Yeah.
And it's changed a lot. And there's a lot of things
digital
I'm used to hitting a cue every time a music changes. Well, now these tracks are together and you don't have to hit this and you don't have to. What? So you have to unlearn sometimes what your body gets used to. But autopilot is a beautiful thing.
Do you like working in the booth? Do you kind of feel I want to be up there?
I like all of production. James has given me the opportunity to learn all the tracks in his show.
James Damare.
James Damare, yes. So I do, I've learned every part except for his, but I do know his monologues. He always says, if I need a replacement. So I love production. I love theater. I love everything about it. So for me, any part, there's no small parts. A lot of people haven't wanted to use me in their show because they don't want me as the lead, but they're like, oh, they think it's demeaning to me to be a stagehand or to be, backstage. But no, not at all. The stagehand is a very important part.
Very.
I'm the one that's setting the props that are going out. Some people prefer me backstage because they trust me. Mm-hmm. And they know that that prop's going to come out the way it's supposed to if I said it. So right. Some people, you know, want me in that aspect. And I don't, there's no small parts in a show. It's a well-oiled machine. Everyone has to be there and do their job at the right moment. And everything needs to happen when it's supposed to. So any position that somebody trusts me in, like, I don't, you know, I have no, what's the word? Pride? No, not pride. What's the word? You know, I don't care. I don't, it's fine. Like, yeah. I'm not, you can't insult me by offering me a smaller part in your show. I'm just happy to be part of a show.
Right. And some shows are larger than others. And when you have a smaller show and you're working with someone, you have so much to do backstage, I think, you know, to try to, because coming on and off and making sure it does run like clockwork.
Well, all the time too. With magic shows, usually it is a smaller cast, maybe four tops, like in the touring shows and things. Like, I've toured with magicians where it's just me and him.
Yeah.
And I'm doing the light, I'm doing the sound, I'm doing that. So I'm close, you know, I'm pushing the light cue, pushing the sound cue, opening the curtain, you know, that I just wheeled the prop on. Then I come out, I do the show. Then I come back down, you know, after the illusion, I close the curtain, I hit the next cue and I move that prop and put the, and I do it all.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of like the corporate I'm getting ready to do now. He trusts me to do his audio cues over the sound people because it's a one night corporate and it's, you know, some ballroom. So he's like, well, what if they don't hit them? You know, like he knows his show. He wants the music cues. So he trusts me to do it over somebody who, you know. So things like that, like I like that people trust me. Like to me, I like that responsibility and I like knowing if I can take the stress off of, because a magician, they can't leave the stage. So for them, it's like they're relying that everything is happening the way it's supposed to back there and that everything's coming out the way that it needs to. And that's why I was saying like making sure how the tables are set and things like that and knowing, because we can't communicate once the show has started.
Right.
A lot of the time, I mean, I've learned to, people say, oh, you're a ventriloquist too? Yes, we all are. And nobody realizes it, but how many times have you talked to your assistant on stage and your mouth hasn't moved? You know what I mean? Like, I'm just saying, like, we do it. We all do it. But,
right.
little things like that are really important that I like to take.
Working with Murray right now. I'm doing that, I wish almost that I could record something backstage because the way that he and Lefty, Doug Lefkowitz, works with them, just on and off where he tosses things off then he takes it back. And then the way they have the tables all lined up and everything's in order and it's just, it runs like clockwork. Mm-hmm. I have to stand out of the way and I'm afraid you might be in the way. And the same thing like you're talking about, when there's just going to be a couple of people or two or three people, the clockwork precision of how they work.
Very important.
Everything look great on stage, or they're just tossing things and someone's there to catch it.
Oh, yeah.
And then it got to be, you put that up, and then you're also repacking that and getting ready for the next show.
That's why you really need to build a good team. And it's so interesting to me because there's some magicians that just constantly are replacing their team around them. And I'm like, why would you want to do that? Like, as a magician, I would feel, if I was a magician, I would want somebody, I would want the team that's there every day that they know my, that way if I go into a different piece, they know what to, you know, like all the things. Because again, once you step out on that stage, you don't leave unless there's a jacket change.
Yeah.
And even still, I'm probably bringing you your jacket.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you're relying on everyone back there to make it all happen. So it's really important to have a trusted team back there. And a lot of people, they'll just, you know, use, oh, well, this girl's prettier, so I'm going to use her. And it's like, okay, well, that's fine. But you know, what's important to you? do you want it to come out, or do you want to just switch a girl every month because, oh, you're older now and I want, you know, okay.
Right.
But that's fine. I mean, it's your show if that's what you want to do. But a lot of people, and some magicians are very difficult to work with, and maybe that's why all the assistants keep changing.
Without having to name any names, have there been some people in which you're thinking, I really don't like, and you had to end a relationship,
so
or perhaps that they have been really difficult to work with?
I mean, I've met some, you know, I've worked with some of the greats, and I've worked with some, you know, some amateurs, and I've worked with it all. And the thing that is everyone's demise for me is the ego, because a lot of magicians, and most of them are wonderful, but there's a lot of them that have the God complex because they wiggle their fingers and raise an eyebrow and magic happens. They have no idea. You know, it's mostly illusionists, but no, not all of them. And again, I have some very, very dear friends and some wonderful people that I've worked with, but a lot of them, they're not consistent. Their monologue is different every night. So the cue to come out, I'm not going off you know, they said, well, come out when I say this. Okay. And I know, and they're, no. I'm telling you, come out when I say, okay, sure. I'm going to come out when you do this hand gesture because you say something different every night, you know, and you can't tell them that, but you just have to know that and kind of adapt around it. So as long as you don't take anything personally ever, you know, because some magicians, when they get stressed out, they yell or they, you know, they blame you or they, you know, and you just have to know. And that's why I never suggest people working with their spouses because they say, oh no, we can draw a line and it's going to be, no, I'm sorry. If you yell at your wife on stage, sometimes she might take that home with her. There's just some people, you know, I don't know. Like, that's why I always say just feel free to yell if that's what you need to do. And I'm going to be okay with it because I don't take it personal because I have worked with all kinds.
That's good advice. You know, my wife was always just, I recognize the stress that you're going through and the things you say before the show. I forget about later because I know you didn't mean it.
Well, that's very important. And a lot of, and some women can do that and some women cannot. And so that's why I always just say. And plus then, you know, I've seen some girls sabotage their spouses because they were mad and things that I would, you know, never do. But and so I always just say, like, if when young magicians say any advice, I say, don't use your girlfriend. That's my first advice. Don't use your girlfriend, because then if it changes or the act changes.
What's another thing as far as trying to select assistants? I mean, how, aside from how someone can find you, which I'll ask in just a second, but also how would someone, let's say, in Idaho, find an assistant? I know, like, when I was talking with, again, Murray, going back to him again, that when he was finding a new assistant, he had done some open auditions, basically. He had dancers come in, and he had decided someone who was going to be really good. So you know what I'm talking about. So how do people find magician's assistant?
Well, definitely
wherever.
I mean, definitely dancing, going for dancers, because
in the local school, high school.
Well,
college,
besides the fact that we move well, we know stage direction, we can take direction. We're used to being yelled at by directors, you know. So like all of those things, but dancers are usually tougher, so we don't mind as much. And like acrobats, like aerialists, things like that are usually, they don't mind the scars or the bruises. There are some people that, you know, you put them in, like if you put a model in a box, she might be like, oh my God, my screw, I came out, my hair was messed up. Like, you don't want that. You don't want someone that doesn't care. You want someone that is, you know what I mean? That's somebody that's like, the illusion is what matters, and they don't care if they get hurt or they get, you know, messed up, whatever.
Your eye candy right there.
Yeah, but so, you know, it's hard to find a good assistant. There's also, you know, word of mouth. Magic is a very small community. And a lot of the time, I mean, I know I've worked with a lot of different magicians. Some people won't work with me because of that.
Really?
Yeah, because they're worried that you're going to talk between magicians.
Oh,
but I don't.
Oh,
and people know that. Like, they.
Do you have to sign non-disclosure agreements?
Yeah, a lot of the time. But, you know, a lot of time it's just like handshake kind of things. But people do things differently. And sometimes I will work with a magician. We just start working together and they say, oh, you worked with this guy. So how does he do?
Such and such.
I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah.
I'm not
going to
tell
you
that. Yeah. Yeah. Well, why would I tell you that? Like, that's going to, you know, it just causes, there's so much problems with that. So sometimes it is better to get people that are actually in the community and know and respect that, you know, rather than like a random person. But yeah, just finding someone that is like balls to the walls and kind of competitive in a certain way. Like, I'm not competitive with people, but with props I am.
Like, with props.
Yes. Okay. Like, sometimes if I get a box that's like giving me a hard time or something, I'm like, you will be my bitch. Like, I say to it, I'm like, I'm gonna master you. I'm sorry to curse. I don't know if I'm allowed to do that. But, you know, I'm competitive with the box, and like, I want to.
You're going to win.
Yes. I'm going to make it happen. And that's what I do. Like, I'm known for jumping in last minute, and people know my magic background. So they just call me and assume, like, we'll rehearse everything else but the magic. They're like, eh.
Going back to some of the magicians also who you've worked with who may have been more difficult than others, and that is specifically whenever you do have a different perspective as far as bringing out the table, getting the box, moving choreography, lighting, or whatever else, and from the production expertise that you have and an experience in the back your background. Do you offer suggestions to magicians, or do you wait until they ask you? And how do they handle
it? A smart
it?
Girl never offers.
Okay.
No, most of the time they don't. They don't want it. Some magicians will.
Even if they ask for it, they really don't want it.
Yeah. You have to be selective with the way that you say it. But some people, you know, if they really care about their craft, they're going to want to know if something's flashing. And that's usually the only time I will say something without being asked is if I see something. Like, oh, hey, you know, this I was sitting in the audience the other day when you were rehearsing, and I was sitting over here and I totally saw that. That's stuff they need to know. And that's for their own. And some people do get offended when you tell them that. But if they care about their craft, then those are things that they should never be offended by. You know, I won't tell them, you know, direction wise, unless, like, if they're a really good friend of mine and I've been working with them for a really long time, like maybe if they come out on stage and the first thing they say to the audience is like, you know, it's not like strong or something, or their first illusion out, they'll like come out and light a tiny little match or something. That's their first moment on stage. And I'm like, ooh, you know what? This is like a really strong piece. Maybe if you open with that, get their attention, you know, like maybe I'll make like a suggestion. Like, is there a reason why? And I always say, is there a reason why you don't do that here? Because sometimes a lot of people have created their act over many, many years.
Yes.
They've put a lot of thought into it. They've gotten advice from people that they trust. And this is the order of their show. And that is it.
Yeah.
And so
I'm not gonna change it.
I never say like, oh, if you did this over here, don't you think it would be better? No, I never say that. I say, is there a reason why you do it this part of the show and not over here? Mm-hmm. And then I just ask that, and then they explain, and I go, oh, okay. And sometimes it's a stupid reason that it makes no sense at all magically, but I'm like,
but
okay,
in their mind,
sure.
they're fine.
But they've thought about it. Yeah. So instead of, and sometimes they go, no, but you know what? That would actually be better over there. And I say, oh, yeah, I was just, but yeah, I usually ask first.
So what magicians should take away from that is, you should ask those who are intimately involved with your show, not just someone who is an audience member watching, but someone who's working with you, for their advice, because they could probably offer some good insight.
Well, you know, they see the audience reaction every night.
That's a good point.
I mean, they're the ones that are there that hear the laughter when you say something on accident. And they go, oh, that might be a good line to keep in.
That's a very good point. There again, back when my wife would assist, I put her in the zigzag or something, and she said, I didn't see the eyes of the audience like she did. Mm-hmm. Whenever I put the blades in and then moved her apart, and she's, you know, watching,
right.
And I'm watching to make sure that the thing doesn't tip over and everything, you know, and she's saying, you should see what I see,
right.
Because they're seeing it from a different perspective. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing, is I think magicians should be very conscientious of and conscious of their audience, and if they can't, they should be asking their assistant, because you have a different perspective that you are watching them. Mm-hmm. As well, and can maybe make some good suggestions to the magician.
Yeah, if they're open. But a lot of them are not.
That's right. You got to be open to
again,
that.
It's,
and not take everything that you say, but at least be open to say, okay, well, thank you.
Right.
Here's the reason why I'm doing it, or not. Or at least maybe that night they'll be thinking about seeing you next day. You know, you're right.
But some magicians I've worked with that are, you know, younger and eager, they'll ask, you know, mm-hmm. they'll say, you've worked with a lot of magicians. What do you think about this? Mm-hmm. You know, and they'll take my opinion, and sometimes they'll use it and sometimes they won't. And, mm-hmm. you know, and I've worked very hard sometimes creating characters for people, and I've been screwed over more in magic than any other part of my career. And again, I've been freelancing since I was 17.
In what way? What do you mean?
Oh, in every which way. I mean, every which way, sideways, all the ways.
Okay.
Mostly, like, I'll put my, because with magic, it's a different relationship than any other show. Like, you know, if I was doing a dance gig and they asked me to come in for a million rehearsals before the gig and they weren't paying any of them, I'd be like, I'm sorry, I don't have the time or energy for this. But with magic, it's absolutely crucial, and I understand that. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, so it's a different relationship that you build. I put myself into it more, like we're a pair.
Yes.
We're an act. No matter, even if I'm just a random assistant that's coming in and out, mm-hmm. like we have to have this kind of like bond and relationship. Mm-hmm. And so I do more and I sacrifice more, and I'm, you know, and sometimes I'll put myself into it, like we'll be creating acts together, where they'll say, this is a new illusion, help me create it. And I will say, okay, and we'll figure out the staging around it. And we'll, you know, I'll go through hours of music and listening to and giving my suggestions and picking out costumes and doing all the things. And then we'll get the show up and running. And then all of a sudden they'll say, can we talk? And they'll say, this is your last day.
Wow.
Well, what?
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, you know, there's been some magicians, I won't say who, until the microphone goes off, I'll let you know, where I've done their show and all of a sudden I see like somebody following me around with a notebook backstage. And I'm like, listen, I'm not an idiot. Obviously somebody's shadowing me. You're going to replace me.
Right.
I have a child that I support on my own.
Yeah.
Can you please just let me know what that date is so that I can plan?
Yeah.
And they're so paranoid again that I'm going to sabotage their show, which I would absolutely never do because it's my reputation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Besides them, it's how I care about magic.
Right.
And then, you know, after the show one night, they'll say, oh, guess what? We need to talk. And I'll say, okay, I know what it's about. When's my last day? That was your last show. You took my last show for me. Like for us, when I work so hard getting something up and running, and I work like if you decide that you want somebody else to assist you, like that's fine. It's your show. I will never be mad at you about what you want to do for your
mm-hmm.
show.
Mm-hmm.
It's you, how you represent yourself. It's fine.
Yeah.
But give me some notice, as like we've been friends. Again, this relationship that we've built is not just random. Like I do things 24 hours a day. I'll do things for you. If you're my magician, I assist you in life. I assist you. So why can't you give me the courtesy of, you know, and they say, oh, well, I was worried you were going to sabotage. I would never do that.
That, however, though, Melanie, it's is offensive. Really no different than people who are working in a 9-to-5 type of a job.
Yeah, they get 2-week notice.
Yes and no. Depending upon the kind of career you may have, they may give you a 2-week notice and saying, okay, you're out of here, but today's your last day. Because they think, number one, you're really not going to be contributing anything
you
for
might,
the next 2 weeks.
Or that you might still offer
or you
supplies.
Might, that's right. You're going to take something, you're going to sabotage in some way.
But it's if I did that, wouldn't they know that by now? I've been in this town my whole life, and I've been working professionally
for you're not
going
to continue to work,
years.
Exactly. Same thing with someone who's going to be fired from one job, unless within an industry they know you're going to work someplace else, and you've got this. Anyhow, the point is, I'm saying it's not dissimilar from a regular job as opposed to entertainer's jobs.
Know.
No, you wouldn't. So I am kind of drawing a comparison because you wouldn't.
Yeah.
Exactly right. But that's really interesting about from the standpoint that they would say, okay, this is your last show, so that way they're afraid that you're going to.
Right, but for me, like if I know it's my last show, I'm going to take it all in. I'm going to plan for drinks afterwards.
Well, yeah.
I'm going to make sure I get pictures in the costumes. Like what we're going to do, I'm going to embrace and enjoy every
moment.
Last moment. And I'm going to perform the hell out of that show
right.
on that last night because it's my last night in the show.
Right.
So yeah, it's very sad. And that happens to me countless times. And I don't know that people, if they're threatened or they think that I'm going to try to tell them how to run their show or whatever it is, you know, there's a lot of reasons why people do things. Half the time, we never know what it is. It's sad every time, and it's disappointing because, again, I really feel a different bond with the people that I assist mm-hmm. rather than it's not just a random show that I'm doing. But that's my, you know, my person. Like,
right.
I feel like if there's something we're going through, you should be able to tell me that.
Right.
And I'm not going, you should know that I'm not going to judge your decision if mm-hmm. it involves moving forward without me. Like, that's okay. You know, if that's what you want to do, it's okay. But give me some notice.
Yeah.
Let me, you know, and in which case I'm going to find and train my replacement most of the time mm-hmm. for you. You know what
right.
I mean? Just
right.
because I want your show to still look good because just, I still care about you. I
right.
still care about your show.
That's right.
Just because I'm not in it anymore
yep.
is okay.
Yep.
But a lot of people don't, you know, most people wouldn't react like that, I guess. So they're worried.
They don't know how to fire people, hire and fire people. They can hire them, but it's difficult to let someone go.
Yes.
And so they don't know how to work, particularly with an assistant.
Right. But, and that's just in general, that's a personality
yeah.
thing, I think.
Mm-hmm,
but,
mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
having mutual respect and continuing that over even when things have changed, I think is really important for your reputation. This is a very small community. And we all talk. And
yeah.
we all know everything that everybody does all the time. So if you're an asshole, we're going to know about it,
yeah.
you know?
Well, that was another thing as far as talking about not hiring your girlfriend or wife or whatever. One of the reasons most of us do or have is to save money. From the standpoint, I think, okay, well, that's going to be easy. Someone I live with and it knows my thinking and
right.
and my movements and whatever else. And also, we're going to be sharing the same checkbook or
right.
checking account or whatever. When it comes to that, do you get paid then per show? I don't want to get into any details more than what you want to
right.
share, but when someone, again, is looking for an assistant, what should they expect to pay?
Well, here's another, this is another thing that goes along with the fact of being in a relationship with the magician mm-hmm. in a certain way that some gigs pay great and some gigs pay not so great. And
okay.
as a magician, you know this, like you might do like a festival show that's like
mm-hmm.
crap money, but
yeah.
but then we get this corporate gig and you're going to get paid $1,000. So,
yeah.
you know, it's things like that. Like when you stick it out with a magician and you realize that, like if you have an assistant, that's your girl, that's your go-to,
mm-hmm.
they usually understand that mm-hmm. it's not always going to be great. And sometimes, you know, I've done shows for $50, you know
mm-hmm.
what I mean? Where
yeah.
I'm like jumping in and out of boxes and
yeah.
potentially killing myself. But I know that if that magician gets a corporate that's going to pay me $500,
yeah.
he's going to call me.
Right.
So that kind of like loyalty. Yeah, like that kind of loyalty, like when there's some people don't call me and they're like, well, you know, I thought you were too pricey. Well, you don't know that. Like you never asked me. Like I don't have like a set price. Like
right.
I won't do a show for onion and, you know,
yeah.
like if I'm learning your act, we're going to be an act together, then that's then
well, that's the thing.
That
when,
means more to me than
when you come in you like know. That, you do have to know a lot about the person and about their show and everything. I mean, it's difficult, particularly if you're going to be doing a one-off. I would think it'd be
right.
a different price if you're going to be doing a one-off as opposed to, okay, you're going to be doing some more shows. I want to have a relationship and actually being able to help you as a true assistant.
Right, but still, it's a matter of what they offer me. You know, I've done a lot of shows where I've learned them from video.
Yeah.
And I've gone in and flown to,
yeah.
like I did the op art, that same day I learned it,
mm-hmm.
which op art is a very
and
it's a very intricate illusion.
Mm-hmm.
And there was dance number before it, and all of that we rehearsed like we had like a few hours before the show.
Yeah,
you know, but the rest of it was all video, and I'm very detail oriented. So when somebody sends me a video from another state, I'm like, okay, this was the cue that she came on. Like when you mm-hmm. said this, she came on from stage right, so I'm assuming you need her on the right. You know, things like that. Like I'm. So I come in ready,
yeah.
like to rehearse. So I always say for magicians that live other places, if you want to fly me in for a one-nighter,
yeah.
I will learn the show before I get there
yeah.
so that we just have to run through it, make sure that there's no little
right.
kinks or anything we have
right.
to work out and like any partnering or handoffs we practice,
mm-hmm.
of course. And then I can go on stage that night. So I've done that a lot of the time where I've come in, I did an origami with someone once where they were like, hey, can you be here in an hour? I had never even been in his box. And that's one of those ones that can sometimes shut on my size D's and sometimes not.
Yeah.
So, you know, things like that. I that kind of thing is
uh-huh.
is good for somebody who's really experienced, but you wouldn't want to ask some random dancer, can you come and do my show tonight? If she's never done magic before. Cause
that's right.
Lot,
she had, if she's just a
yeah.
dancer, that's
there's
magician's
a
assistant
of,
is a completely different thing
yes.
than just dancing on stage.
Right. But dancers know they, but they know their bodies. They move
mm-hmm.
well. And
mm-hmm.
they're, you know,
mm-hmm.
like one time for Jason Byrne. Yes. I did, he was on the cruise ships
mm-hmm.
and they happened to be rehearsing in Las Vegas, which was such an amazing opportunity because I was able to, Mr. Get called me in and I taught all of the girls how to be in all of the illusions.
I had lunch with Miss Engett yesterday.
Yeah, oh, I love her.
I do, too. I just met her, and she's such a lovely lady.
Amazing, amazing woman.
And she also does a lot of things, I guess, what Joni used to do, as far as she does some choreography and all that kind of stuff, as well as her production company.
Yeah, she's amazing.
And an artist.
So I was so honored to be called in for that, and I thought it was such a useful tool, because the cruise ships, most of the time, they get whatever dancer's willing, and whether she's dedicated or whether she cares, and everybody fits differently in the boxes. So when you're having to move yourself in small spaces, you have to kind of know, okay, well, I can go like this. So that's what I did, is I took the girl and I said, okay, it doesn't look like you're going to be able to sit like this. Why don't you try folding your leg like this, and then we'll try your head over here. You know, and then they try that. Okay, that doesn't work. Let's try this. So I know how to get in the boxes, and I showed each of the girl what works for them. We ran through it with every girl, with every illusion. That way, if one was sick or one was injured, the other one can jump in. Everyone was familiar, and it was very useful. And I've offered to do that with other magicians for fly-on, to fly onto the ship when they start a new run, to train their assistant. So again, I learned the track of the show. I know what her cues are. I write it all very clearly so that she has every information she needs. I make, you know, I do all of that so that now they have the show up and running, you know, and then I leave and she does the show, you know, so I'm fine with all of that. Like, some people think they're going to insult me by offering me, you know, that kind of a position, which nothing insults me. I'm just happy to be involved.
Just happy to be involved.
Yeah, no, I love what I do. And, I, you know, any aspect I can be involved
in. Well, as I start to wrap up, I do have another question about, has there ever been an illusion or a show or a person perhaps in which you have said no? It's like, I really don't be involved in that, or I can see this is not going to work, or I don't think I want to get in that situation. When you're saying, it sounds like you're saying yes to about everything, but has there been something that you've kind of said, or you maybe turned down at the last minute after you got into it and said, this is not the right situation for me?
If something was dangerous and I knew it was dangerous, then I might say, you know, no, but there's...
Hasn't been to date.
But, I don't really say no to too much. I mean, I have to trust the person, though. Like, you know, I've done the buzzsaw a million times, but if Bill Smith didn't tell me that that blade was secure, I would not have gotten under that blade. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, but I trust Bill Smith, so, you know, things like that. But yeah, no, it's been a wild ride, and I have many scars and things, and I'm proud. I wear them. I say I'm a magic warrior. You
know? A magic warrior.
Battle scar La Magica, you know?
Yeah, magic warrior princess.
Yes, I know. I just wanted to start a line of t-shirts for assistants, which was really funny. You know, it's things
you
like...
are going to, you have.
Well, I designed them already, but I don't have like a company that I was going to do it with. But, you know, things that say like, I'm not officially your assistant until you make me bleed, you know, stuff like that.
Okay.
I say, once you scarred me, then I'm officially yours. You know, there's, I have a whole list of things I've collected, sayings like that over the years that I, you know, that I make light of the fact that what I'm doing is actually really dangerous and I could die at any moment.
And they can appreciate that.
Yes.
Well, listen, you've been a great guest. I thank you very much.
This has been
phenomenal. I've not discussed this kind of detail, you know, with some people. I think a lot of people are going to get a lot out of this
well.
It's not just magicians, but also assistants who should be, potential assistants should be listening to this then as well. That's great.
Well, I'm honored. I hope I didn't insult anyone.
if they did, your email address is.
Well,
which, by the way, how will people get in touch with you if they do want to, if they're looking for an assistant and they're outside of Las Vegas?
Well, on Instagram, I'm magic_Melanie. M-E-L-A-N-I-E. Mm-hmm. And I also own the talent agency poshproductionslv.com. So that's our website. Okay. And my contact number is actually on there as the company's
excellent
number. So,
so my podcast is called The Magic Word. So what is your philosophy of life? What is your,
philosophy of life? Enjoy every moment you can.
That says it all. Enjoy every moment you can. That's great. Mel, this has been nothing short of joyous. It's just been wonderful. Thank you for your time.
Great way to start the day.
What it is, and such a sparkling personality and a lovely smile. You don't have a frown in your body.
Too many wrinkles it causes, you know?
That's right. Frowns will cause you wrinkles.
Right. That's why I say entertainers don't age, because we're a happy people.
Happy people. That's right.
It's true.
Well, you've made me happy today. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm honored.
So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Melanie Kramer. This is Scotty out. Thank you very much, Melanie, for a delightful conversation. This was just so much fun. I enjoyed having the opportunity to get to know you so much better and to learn what it's like inside the box. Thanks for all those stories. Quite delightful as well, and very funny. I want to remind everybody again to come back next week. We're going to talk with someone perhaps you might remember from the 1980s, but has not been around for quite some time, but is starting to return slowly into the magic world.
and she, yes, I mean she, was one half of a very famous magic duo that were quite popular back before 2000. And so she, after 20 years, I believe she's going to start to get back into magic. And so I know you'll come, well, I might as well tell you now. This will be an early surprise, an early Christmas gift for you. It's going to be Mia from Petrick and Mia. And she hasn't been heard from for quite a while. So I had an opportunity to sit down with her and chat for a while, and she will be my special guest next week. So make sure you do subscribe to the Pod Letter. And again, just go to the magicwordpodcast.com, and there you can subscribe to that. This way you know who's going to be coming from week to week. Also, if you would please, you could really do us a great favor. If you could just give us a 5-star rating on iTunes or whatever podcast platform, you can leave us your comments. Just if you can write down some sort of if you have a nice comment to say and give us 5 stars, that really does help our podcast to grow. And we couldn't do this without you. And I do mean that sincerely, because I couldn't do this without you, because otherwise I would just be talking to myself, which has always been my philosophy of life, that many of you already know. My saying is, a magician who's not working is only fooling himself. And I guess that could be also extended to a podcaster. A podcaster who doesn't have an audience is only talking to himself. So I thank you guys very much for being my audience and also for liking this podcast. Speaking of which, I do want to give you just a couple of different testimonials that have been posted recently on iTunes, so this way you kind of get an idea of what kind of comments you might want to consider when you give your 5-star rating. CNY Magic titled his comment as "Best Magic Podcast Out There!" Exclamation point. He says, I regularly listen, or she, this person says, I regularly listen to over a dozen magic-related podcasts, but as a longtime listener, The Magic Word is hands down my favorite. Scott Wells has fantastic conversations with an amazing selection of guests. Thank you. I appreciate that, CNY Magic. And another one is from Xanadu 1215. And Xanadu titles this saying, this is great for both non-magicians and magicians alike. Xanadu says, Scott really knows how to interview. He has interesting people with a lot of fun facts and insights into their performances and life. This is a podcast that is enjoyable to listen to. I feel you get a lot out of it just by relaxing with an hour or so of the Magic Word podcast. Thanks, Xanadu 1215. That's another great comment. I appreciate that. So if the rest of you would like to help contribute to that as well and give your 5-star rating with some nice comment, I would certainly appreciate it. And again, that helps our podcast to grow. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to enjoy every moment you can. This is Scotty out.